Ever get that feeling? You're looking at something like crazy beautiful, and you're like, whoa, that's
And
amazing.
then, Tay, you just kind of move on.
That was me with Arabic calligraphy until now, obviously. You see it everywhere, right?
Mosques, museums, even like modern art these days, but I never really got it.
Like the significance. But today, oh, we're going deep. We've got three fascinating articles.
We're gonna unlock the secrets of this whole ancient art form right here, right now.
It's funny because it's not just about like fancy handwriting, you know?
Arabic calligraphy is really like the heart and soul of Islamic art. It's culture, really, how it's
For
evolved.
centuries, it's been this powerful, powerful way of expressing yourself. It's really a testament to, well, to the beauty of the Arabic language itself.
Okay, so we're talking more than just pretty letters here.
It's connected to history, religion, art. How do we even begin to, I don't know, unpack all of that?
Well, we've got to start with the Nabataeans. They were this ancient Arab people known for their architecture.
Think Petra, you know, in Jordan. Amazing place.
But most people, they don't realize these were the guys who really influenced the Arabic script.
So around the 4th century BCE, they used an Aramaic dialect. And get this, it was written from right to left, just like Arabic.
Whoa, seriously, I had no idea it went back that far. So how did we get from that, the Nabataeans?
To like what we think of as Arabic calligraphy now. What's the missing link?
Well, there was this amazing discovery back in 2014 in Saudi Arabia. Archaeologists, they found this inscription.
The oldest Arabic inscription ever,
Yeah.
dating all the way back to, get this, 469-470 CE.
This was huge because it showed this really clear connection, this blend between the Nabataean writing style and Arabic.
It proved what people had thought, the Nabataean, it was like the precursor to the Arabic script we know.
Before that discovery, the oldest example we had was from 328 CE. That one was found in Syria, but it was all Nabataean characters, nothing else.
Okay, so we've got this blend happening.
But eventually, one style had to come out on top, right? Like the
Yeah.
one that really defined early Arabic calligraphy. What was it?
That's where Kufic comes in. You could call it like the OG of Arabic calligraphy, named after Kufa, a city in Iraq.
And it became really big in the 7th century. Bold, angular, geometric letters.
If you've ever seen pictures of early Qurans, I'm talking about that incredible blue Quran. It has gold lettering on blue parchment.
Or the top copy manuscript, the oldest, almost complete Quran that exists.
Both in Kufic.
Okay, so I'm all about the visuals. Why Kufic?
What made it the style for these super important texts?
There are a few reasons. First, you've got to think about the context. Islam and the Arabic language, they were spreading rapidly in the 7th and 8th centuries.
It needed a script, you know, for religious texts, and it had to be clear, authoritative, even.
And Kufic, with that bold simplicity, it just fit.
Plus, it wasn't just readable, it was beautiful. That geometric style made it perfect for decorating architecture.
One of the earliest examples is actually right in Jerusalem, the Dome of the Rock.
It's got this 240-meter-long Quranic inscription in Kufic script.
Now that's what I call going big. So Kufic was the style. Why don't we see it everywhere now?
Did it just, like, disappear?
That's a great question. It's more about evolution. Like Kufic didn't die out, you know?
It's just empires grew. Right? Communication had to keep up. And Kufic, it took time to write, even if it was beautiful.
Cursive scripts like Nask were just faster, easier to reproduce.
Right. Like, I can see using Kufic for, like, a really important monument.
But you wouldn't want to use it to write your grocery list.
Exactly. But Kufic didn't vanish. It's still around. Just look at the Sultan Hassan Mosque in Cairo. Incredible.
And it's not just traditional materials either. Even the way they used brickwork to make Kufic script in the Bibi Khana Mosque in Samarkand, it's mind-blowing.
It's like artistry and engineering all in one. So we've got these scripts evolving.
But was it all like off the cuff back then? If I'd wanted to try calligraphy, could I just go for it?
And that's where things get really interesting. Early scripts, like Kufic, they didn't really have strict rules.
But then came a true calligraphy legend, Ibn Mukhla. This guy wasn't just a calligrapher, by the way.
He was a vizier in the Abbasid Caliphate, a real Renaissance man.
Okay, you've got my attention.
So this Ibn Mukhla, he's the one who brought the rules to calligraphy, like literally.
He did. He believed that true beauty in calligraphy came from harmony. Between the letters, it had to be balanced form and proportion.
So he creates this whole system, a revolutionary system called Al-Khat Al-Mansub. It brought mathematical precision to the art form.
Wait, math, tell me he wasn't using a protractor and compass for all this.
No need for those. But it was ingenious. So picture this. When a calligrapher's pen, the qalam, touches the paper, it makes a tiny dot, right?
rhomboid shaped. And Ibn Mukla, he realizes this dot, it's the key. It unlocks the visual harmony.
So he uses the dot along with the length of the aleph, that's the first letter in the Arabic alphabet, and a circle.
It's all a system of measurement for each letter. It's genius, pure genius.
Arabic calligraphy changes overnight. Suddenly, there's consistency, clear guidelines, which made it even more beautiful. He comes up with six major scripts: Nask, Muhakwak, Raihani, Thuluth, Rika, and Taqi.
Each one has its own precise proportions laid out by Ibn Mukla.
So he's like the godfather of standardized calligraphy.
Yeah.
But if it was that groundbreaking, why haven't I seen it in a museum?
Sadly, none of his original works have survived.
It's actually a pretty tragic story. He was in prison. They cut off his hand and tongue.
It really makes you think about the power his calligraphy had, how it could be seen as beautiful, but also dangerous, even threatening.
Wow. That's intense. But even with that ending, his system, his legacy, it lived on, right?
Of course. I mean, even today, calligraphy wouldn't be the same without him. Think about it. His work, that was the foundation.
Centuries of mastery came after him. His system was so good that other calligraphy giants, they took what he did and built on it.
Two important figures were Ibn al-Bawwab and Yaqut al-Mustasimi, both of them from Baghdad.
Ibn al-Bawwab was incredibly prolific, by the way. Legend has it he created 64 copies of the Quran.
64 Qurans. This guy clearly did not have writer's block.
Right. And get this, only one of his Qurans survived.
It's at the Chester Beatty Library in Dublin, a real treasure. It's thought to be one of the very first Qurans written on paper, not parchment.
And the Nask script in it, it's beautiful, really elegant.
From an incredible legacy to unbelievable craftsmanship, it sounds like we're moving past just the writing itself now.
Calligraphy was more than just copying text, wasn't it?
You're right on track. The Quran, it was key in calligraphy's development. But the art form itself always had this potential
to go beyond the page. Mm-hmm. It became about expressing beauty and meaning with every single stroke on any surface.
Okay, now I have to know. We've got this gorgeous writing. What did they do with it? Where did they put it? Okay, so last we left off, Arabic calligraphy was breaking free from the page. It was on buildings and books everywhere.
Exactly. It was like they discovered the visual language of Islamic art and architecture, all in the strokes of a pen.
I'm picturing those incredible mosques, the ones where it's like calligraphy on every surface. You walk in and it's like stepping into a work of art.
That's the idea. Imagine walking into a mosque for the first time. Right there, above the entrance, you see this inscription. It tells you who built this amazing space, when it was built, maybe even who it was dedicated to.
A built-in history lesson before you even walk through the door.
Exactly. And it wasn't just about, you know, making it look pretty. Those inscriptions, they were strategic. Like, take the mihrab, that's the niche in the wall that shows you the direction of Mecca, where Muslims face to pray. They'd often inscribe verses from the Quran around the mihrab.
Guiding worshipers, enhancing that connection to the divine. It's like the building itself becomes part of the spiritual experience.
That's exactly it. And remember, in Islamic art, there are restrictions on depicting humans or animals, especially in religious spaces. That made calligraphy even more important. It wasn't just decoration. It was the way to express beauty, to give meaning to these spaces, all through the power of Arabic script.
It's like turning words into art, into a form of visual prayer, almost.
Beautifully put. And we can't forget the craftsmanship involved. These artisans, they were masters of their craft. Mm. They didn't just write beautifully. They understood the nuances of each script, how each letter interacted with the space around it, its design, geometry, devotion, all in one.
We've talked about mosques, but I'm imagining this artistry went beyond religious spaces too. Palaces, libraries, did they get the calligraphy treatment?
Oh, absolutely. Remember those six scripts Ibn Mukla defined? Each one had its own, like, personalities, a specific use. Nask, with its clarity and readability, it was perfect for manuscripts, for official documents. Thuluth, on the other hand, with those elegant proportions, that was a natural fit for those grand inscriptions we see in mosques.
It's like choosing the right font for a project you wouldn't use Comic Sans for a wedding invitation.
Laughs, exactly. Each script had its place. And it's reflected in the materials, too. Like, during the Fatimid era, this more free-flowing style of Kufic, we call it floriated Kufic, became really popular for ceramics. Imagine these swirling floral patterns on bowls and plates.
So cool. Now I want to go antique shopping, see if I can find some hidden calligraphy treasures.
Laughs, I might join you. It's amazing, right? This art form that started with religious texts just exploded across society, buildings, everyday objects. It was everywhere.
It really makes you think about the people behind it all. I mean, we've talked about the masters, the Ibn Mukhlas of the world, but what about the everyday calligraphers?
It's a great question. Just like today, there were different levels of expertise. You had your true masters, the ones who dedicated their lives to perfecting their craft, working for rulers, creating exquisite manuscripts, or passing their knowledge on to the next generation.
The calligraphy rock stars. But then were there, like, the everyday calligraphers, the ones who would pen your grocery list, but way fancier.
Laughs was shitting. I love that, the blue-collar calligraphers. You're exactly right, though. There were calligraphers who served the needs of everyday people. Picture a bustling marketplace. You'd have scribes set up at stalls, ready to write letters, contracts, signs for shops, anything you needed.
Talk about convenient. It's like having a personal calligrapher on speed dial. It makes you wish we still did that.
Right. There's a certain beauty to it.
Hmm.
It speaks to how much they valued the written word. Calligraphy wasn't just a job. It was part of life. How they communicated, preserved knowledge, expressed their faith. It was everything.
Makes you wonder what we lost along the way. We've gone from a world where beautiful writing was everywhere to, you know, it being more of a niche art form. I'm guessing the printing press had something to do with that.
Oh, absolutely. The printing press changed everything. Suddenly, reproducing text was faster, cheaper, more accessible. But with that efficiency came a shift. Calligraphy went from being essential for communication to being seen as more of an art form, something specialized.
It's like how we use computers now. I can type way faster than I can write by hand, but there's something special about a handwritten note.
I totally agree, and that's what's so interesting about how much interest there is in calligraphy these days. Mm-hmm. It's not that we need it the same way. It's more that we're rediscovering its beauty, its power to connect us to something deeper. Something beyond the digital noise.
Like how vinyl records are making a comeback. It's that analog connection, the experience, the craftsmanship.
Exactly. People want that tangible, handmade authenticity. And calligraphy has that. Plus, this added layer of history, of tradition. It's like holding a thread that connects you to the past.
So we've talked about the past. We've touched on the present. What about the future? Where is this ancient art form going next? So we've journeyed through time with Arabic calligraphy.
From its beginnings to the digital age, who knew ink and a pen could hold so much history?
And so much possibility still to come. It's an open book, really.
It really is. Speaking of journeys, before we wrap up, I have to know what's next for Arabic calligraphy. Where do you see it going?
That's the most exciting part. It's all about pushing those boundaries. We're already seeing artists experiment with new materials, new technologies.
But it all goes back to the core of this art form honoring tradition.
So what, like 3D printing, VR?
Are we going to have AI calligraphy? Like robots with qualms making masterpieces?
Hey, you never know. But even if we get to the point where some algorithm can copy the strokes of a master.
The heart of it, the human touch, the connection between the artist and the tool and the paper, that's something else. You can't just replicate that.
It's like that difference between a typed letter and a handwritten note, right?
They both say something, but that handwritten one, it's got soul.
You get it.
Yeah.
And that's worth protecting, worth celebrating. Even with all this technology, that human touch is what matters.
It really makes you realize art forms like calligraphy, they're not stuck in the past. They're living, breathing things, constantly changing.
Right. Think about it. Calligraphy has survived centuries of change. Influences from other cultures, different materials, used for everything from, well, you know, sacred texts to street art. It's resilient.
What a thought. We started with just the origins of Arabic script, right?
And then these intricate styles, empires rising and falling. But through it all, calligraphy endured.
And thrived. That's why it's so interesting. It's proof that we're creative, that we need to connect to something bigger than ourselves, whether that's faith or beauty or just leaving our mark on the world.
Beautifully said. Okay, so as we wrap up our deep dive into the world of Arabic calligraphy, what's the one thing you hope our listeners take away from this?
I want them to understand it's not just about beautiful handwriting. It's a look into history, culture, spirituality, human creativity lasting through time. Yeah. That's powerful.
That is powerful. For me, it's a good reminder something old can still be really relevant, inspiring even. Arabic calligraphy, it reminds us that art changes. It grows, adapts, finds new meaning with each generation.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
And on that note, that's a wrap on this episode of The Deep Dive. We went deep into the world of Arabic calligraphy, its humble beginnings, its vibrant present, and its future, which is wide open. Make sure to check out our show notes for all those links we talked about, artists, historical figures, maybe even those calligraphy robots we're all waiting for. Until next time, stay curious. And hey, maybe you'll be inspired to pick up a qalam yourself and try your hand at a little calligraphy.